여러분 사랑해. Theravan Saranai, this is a sound test just to make sure you can hear my voice. If you could please drop a message to let me know. It looks to me like we are experiencing some technical issues, but I would help if you could confirm that you can hear us on the YouTube audio. Therwan Sanai. Therwan Saranai, to our listeners who are joining us, can you please let me know if you can hear us on YouTube? Okay, great. In which case, let's get started. Okay, so welcome again to all our listeners from all around the world, as well as those who have joined us to join the sermon live and are here with us today. We are streaming the sermon not from within the premises of the monastery. We've had to travel a little today, and this is the reason for the delay in getting started, but as always, we seem to find ourselves in the midst of various technical issues and difficulties. That is usually the case when we try to do anything that is worthwhile, but we don't give up. That is not our way. We will keep fighting, and we will keep doing whatever it takes to bring these sermons to you. Hopefully the sound quality is much better than it was last week when we had some trouble getting the audio working as we were hoping with the sermon, when the sermon was being transmitted from the monastery. We found the cause for that, and we will ensure to not repeat that in future, but the recorded sermon was was made available after the sermon was concluded. But again, I'm not sure how much it was of use, given that the audio quality, as I had listened to it, wasn't all that great. But that's the history. What we are here to talk about is not our history. We're here to talk about today and what happens to us from today onwards. We're here to talk about the future. We're here to talk about what we do right now and how that can help us with our future. As always, before we commence our sermon, let us reflect on the fact that this is the Lord Buddha's Dhamma that we discuss and we talk on this program. It is because of his infinite compassion and his infinite kindness, his infinite wisdom, that we have this Dhamma today. It is because he sacrificed himself for the refuge of all beings, all sentient beings, and over the course of many eons in samsara, he searched for the truth and he searched for the path to purification. King Satcha Gavesi, King Kusala Gavesi, that was his purpose, that was his method. Today we are in receipt of that information, we are in receipt of that Dhamma, and in receipt of the path to help us cross the ocean of samsara. So before we commence, let us be grateful and let us pay homage to the Lord Buddha for having given us this Dhamma such that it may help us all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Let us also take a moment to invite those beings who are not able to join us in person, but who are as eager as any one of us to listen to these sermons, because it is the Buddha's Dhamma that we talk and we discuss on these programs, as I said at the beginning. The devas, the brahmas, spirits, the dead, demons, etc., etc., etc. Those beings who are lost in samsara just as much as you and I were before we received this Dhamma, as well as those who, having had received and heard the Lord Buddha's Dhamma, are eager to listen more of it, and who are eager to make use of this Dhamma to enrich their lives and fulfill the noble attainments, that is Sotapanna, Sakurdagami, Anagami and Arahat. So let us invite all of those beings, as well as our past relations, anyone who might have been a friend of ours, a parent, a brother, a sister, an uncle, aunt, or any kind of relation, anyone who might have helped us at some point in samsara, even if it was by offering us a glass of water, or perhaps just by showing us right from wrong when we were lost, in a worldly sense even. Let us invite all of them. May they all find what they're looking for. May they all find refuge in the Dhamma. May they all find refuge in the Buddha. May they all find refuge in the Sangha. May they find the supreme bliss of Nibbana. May they listen to this Dhamma and achieve the noble attainments themselves. So as I make this invitation, please join me in extending that invitation in your hearts and in your minds to all those beings. May they all join us. Rejoice in the merits that we are about to acquire, and listen to this Dhamma and attain the noble fruits, to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Samanta chakravalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam Rajasansa Sunantu Sagha Mokkadam
Dhammasavanakalo ayam badanta. Dhammasavanakalo ayam badanta. Dhammasavanakalo ayam badanta.
And finally, let us also please take a moment to acknowledge the clear fact that throughout samsara we have not always had the good fortune of associating with noble people, noble friends, kalyana mitras. In all the time we have spent in samsara, virtually all of it we have spent in the association of ignoble people, immoral people. And therefore, having had taken up their philosophy of life, philosophy of how to live life and how to conduct ourselves, we will have often and most certainly have offended, insulted and hurt, both physically and mentally, noble people. Having not had the opportunity and having not had the good foresight and wisdom to recognize the Samma Sambuddhas, the Paccheka Buddhas, the Arahatta Buddhas and all other Aryans, that we will have oftentimes insulted them, use words of slander, hurt them, and therefore today when we attempt to listen to the Dhamma and try to understand this Dhamma and comprehend this Dhamma, the karma that we have done, the deeds that we have done, the wrongdoings of our past come to bite us on the backs and they block our path to wisdom. They block our path to emancipation, our path to liberation. So before we commence these sermons, before we listen to these sermons in the hope that we may find the ultimate happiness of in life, in the hope that we may understand this Dhamma to help us attain Nibbana, let us all take a moment to seek forgiveness from the Noble Triple Gem, from all the Aryans who we may have come past, all the noble people that we may have come past in samsara. May they forgive us for all the times that we have insulted them. May they forgive us for all the times that we may have hurt them. And may they forgive us for all the times we may have been ungenerous and unkind to them. And finally, make a firm resolution that through the course of this sermon, you will attain the noble attainments of Sotapanna, Sakurdagami, Anagami and Arihat. Okay. I've had a few questions come through on YouTube and they're not necessarily to do with the sermon that we are streaming live right now. It's actually people asking if they can't listen to the Sinhala sermon online. You can most certainly do that, but that sermon's going to be broadcast via our website, dharmayabai.org, and you will receive further announcements and notifications about that. As well as, it's going to be broadcast via the website. So on YouTube today we are streaming the English sermon. So that's what we'll be using this channel for from this point forward. In the meantime, we also have had a few questions that came through on Skype, and I'm just going to switch to Skype and try and locate those questions. In fact, if someone could be kind enough to just post them back on Skype so I can quickly pick them up rather than having to scroll back and forth, that would be helpful. But I will, from memory, one of these questions was, how does one know when they have attained this, the noble fruit of Sotapanna? How can you tell? So that was one question that was posted. This is a really interesting question, and I'm sure whether you ask this question or not, it's absolutely a question that comes in the minds of everyone that listens to Dhamma. This can't be the first time you would have asked that. You will have asked that from yourselves, and you probably ask that from yourselves every day. Have I done? Have I achieved it? Or is there more I need to do to get there? And particularly, you know, because we always say that as long as the Dhamma and the discipline continues to prevail, as the Lord Buddha described in the Mahaparinibbana Sutra, there will always be noble attainments, there will always be arahants, for as long as my Dhamma and my discipline prevail in the world, then because you're now getting to listen to this Dhamma and you're beginning to hear stories of arahants who come into this world and then they attain Anupadisesa Nibbana Dhatu, which is where you completely let go of the life faculty, and having completely attained the stage of arahathood, you are not reborn again, and that therein is the end of all suffering. People, it is fair for people to be thinking about this, and it's fair for people to be asking this question, and it's one I would encourage to a certain extent though, and I'll tell you why I say to a certain extent. It's because sometimes one can be deluded. Listening to the Dhamma, sometimes you come past a point where you compare yourselves to the Dhamma that is taught. You compare yourselves to what perhaps you read in a book. And you ask yourselves, well, you know, I don't do the things that I used to do. I don't take part in the 10 akusalas, the 10 evil deeds. And therefore, perhaps I have attained the fruit of Sotapanna. And also you might think, well, I'm also beginning to see anicca dukkha anatta in the world around me. And therefore, it is probably the case that I have now attained Sotapanna. The issue that we have here is when you try to compare yourselves to something that you read, something that you hear, or something that someone tells you, it's a subjective comparison. The example I can give is if you go to school and or wherever you learn how to work a math problem, only you know whether you've understood that problem or not. Your teacher can teach you the method to solve a problem, but whether you've understood how to solve the problem or not is entirely something that you know. You can't go and ask your teacher, "Have I understood what you've taught me?" That's not a valid question. The teacher is only going to say, "Well, how do I know that? Can you work these problems?" They might give you some new problems that you haven't seen before, and say, "Try working these out. And if you can work these out, then try working some more out. If you've done those, try working a few more out. And then you'll know whether you've understood how to work those problems or not." And likewise, whether you've attained the fruit of Sotapanna as well as the other fruits of Sakurdagami, Anagami and Arhat is very much a case of another person, a third party can't validate that for you. Well, in fact, there was one person who could do that, but we don't have the luxury of him because he passed away. He went into enlightenment 2600 years ago, and that was the Lord Buddha. The Lord Buddha was able to look at your minds and look at our minds and look at how much raga, dvesha, moha, which is desire, aversion and delusion we have in ourselves, and he was able to look into our sentiments and confirm which noble attainment we would have achieved. But that is not possible now. So we have to be a mirror for ourselves and see where we are on the path. The other thing I would like to say is that fortunately, when the Buddha was asked, what is it that a prutakjana, or someone who has not listened to the Buddha's Dhamma, someone who is an ignoble person, and I'll use that word as the best translation I can find of the word prutakjana, it's simply a lay person, or it could even be a monk, it makes no difference. If you've not listened to the Dhamma, if you've not practiced the Dhamma that helps you attain at least the state of Sotapanna Marga, then you are a Pritakjana. Thankfully, when the Buddha was asked, what is it that a Pritakjana needs to do to become a Sotapanna, he said, practice Anicca Dukkha Anatta. And when he was asked, what is it a Sotapanna needs to do to become a Sakurdagami, he said, practice Anicca Dukkha Anatta. And then when asked, what is it that a Sakurdagami needs to do to become an Anagami, practice Anicca Dukkha Anatta. And what does an Anagami need to do to become an Arahant? It was the same answer. Well, the Buddha was finally asked, well, what does an Arahant need to do? Practice Anicca Dukkha Anatta. Which is excellent advice and instruction for us, because what that tells us is it doesn't matter where we are on the path. It's the same thing we need to do, we need to keep doing over and over and over and over again. So, in fact, there was back in the time of the Buddha, and this happened between, I think it was a nun, I can't remember her name now, but between her and Venerable Ananda, where this nun approaches Venerable Ananda and explains to him, she says, Venerable Sir, I can see, but I have no interest in looking at things. I can hear, but I have no interest in hearing things. I can smell, but I have no interest in smelling things. And I can taste, but I have no interest in tasting things. And likewise, and she talks about her five senses. She asks Venerable Ananda, Venerable Sir, what is this state? What does the Buddha say this state of mind is? To which Venerable Ananda says, well, actually, I'm not entirely sure, so I'll have to refer you to the Lord Buddha. He goes to the Lord Buddha and repeats the question, and to which the Lord Buddha answers, that, Ananda, is the state of Arahanthood. So, what's clear from that example is, sometimes one can attain the state of Arahanthood, but not realize that they have become an Arahant. Because let's take this example. Imagine to become and I'll take a really simple example. Don't read too much into this, just take the story that I'm trying to tell you here, or take the example I'm trying to give you here. Let's say to become a doctor, all you needed to do was learn what was in a textbook. And this textbook was 1,000 pages. Once you studied this textbook, it's 1,000 pages, and you can work out all the problems in this book, as well as other problems which may not appear in the book, but as long as you've understood the philosophy that's in this book, as long as you can understand the theory, and it all makes sense to you, and you can apply it to whatever problem you come across, let's say that's all the knowledge you need to become a doctor. If I give this book to you and say, go read this book, go study this book, work out all the problems and understand and learn how to work out these problems, but I don't tell you that you can, once you've gone through this, you're a doctor now, or you have all the knowledge you need to become a doctor, you'll go away and start reading this book because you're interested in it. You go and study this book, you go and work out the problems, and you come back and tell me, yes, I've done all of that. Ask me any question out of any of the theory in here and I can give you the answer. Why did you ask me to read this book? What is it that I've got to gain from this? At which point I'll tell you, well, actually, now that you've learnt everything in that book, you are an Arahant. You're a doctor. Oh, right, I didn't realize that. Because what we didn't do beforehand is explain to this person that when you've studied all of this, you're a doctor. So likewise, if you don't know that once you've eradicated raga, dvesha, moha in your minds entirely, then you're an Arahant. But if I only tell you all you need to do is eradicate raga, dvesha, moha, you wouldn't know what the result is at the point you get to the end of that. Remember, when Angulimala comes running to the Lord Buddha, he didn't come and ask the question, how do I become a Sotapanna? The Buddha didn't say, Angulimala, listen to this, and at the end of this sermon, you're going to become a Sotapanna. This is why Angulimala, when having attained the fruit of Sotapanna, all he said was, I can now clearly see, the path. I can now clearly see the change that's happened in my life. He didn't say, I now know that I am a Sotapan, because that teaching was not given to him. He doesn't know what this state of mind is. And that's perfectly fine. So, fortunately, this is what I'm saying, you don't need to know where you're on the path as long as you're on the right path. This is why even after you become an Arahant, what have you got to do after that? Keep practicing Anicca Anatta. If, say, after you become a Sotapanna, to become a Sakurdagami, you had to do something else, then we have a problem. Because you would need to know that you are now a Sotapanna. If there was a teaching that said, once you become an Anagami, you had to do something different. Now you have a problem if you didn't know if you were an Anagami. But, fortunately, we don't have that problem. From start to end, and from end onwards, practice Anicca Dukkha Anatta. Now, having said all of that, the Buddha gives us certain characteristics of a Sotapanna, and we can, there's no harm in learning a little bit about the attributes of a Sotapanna, because that can help us ascertain if you are a Sotapanna. Again, I can't emphasize this point enough. Don't use this as the absolute kind of acid test of if you have become a Sotapanna. Keep practicing the path, because only a Buddha can tell you for sure. I mean, what if you've gone crazy? You know, you're mad and you're thinking you're a Sotapanna. How can anyone come and prove that you're wrong? You wouldn't accept it. Just because you feel that you've become a Sotapanna might not necessarily be an absolute crystal clear indicator that you're a Sotapanna. Okay? This is why I re-emphasize the point, just keep practicing the path. As long as you're on the path, you will get there. Okay? But, nevertheless, what are the attributes of a Sotapanna? A Sotapanna has... Let's look at how does one become a Sotapanna in the first place. I use the example of Angulimala. When Angulimala approached the Buddha, remember, he was not a disciple of the Buddha. He didn't know Buddhism. He didn't know any of the Buddha's teaching. All he was interested in was cutting off one of his fingers, cutting off his thumbs, so that he could add that to his necklace of thumbs. And if you haven't heard this story, then I would encourage you to go and read it up. For those listeners of ours who may not be familiar with this particular story. Angulimala was a renowned murderer back in the day, and he did this because he was asked to fulfill his teacher's instruction, and his teacher wanted him to make a necklace out of human thumbs. So he went round every person he would meet, he would kill them and chop off their thumb and then add that to a necklace, and that was what he was infamous for back in the time. So when he saw the Buddha, all he could see was, here's a man that I could chop his thumbs off and add that to my necklace. Now, the story also goes, of course, the reason that the Buddha approached Angulimala was because he was about to go and kill his mother. And if he had killed his mother, then he would have committed a heinous crime or an anantariya papa karma. At which point, no matter how many Buddhas he would come across, he would not attain Sotapanna. He would not be able to remove himself from being born in the apaya, in the hells, in the next birth. Okay? So, when the Buddha approached him, he started to preach to him the Dhamma. Having seen the Buddha, Angulimala said, Buddha, I'm here. He said, you know, he spoke in harsh words. He said, hey, you, stop there. I want to chop your thumbs off. All he could see was a bald-headed man. And so he said, you bald-headed man, stop there. I'm going to come and chop your thumbs off. So he was using harsh words. He was very angry, obviously. And running after him with his sword to kill him and cut his thumbs off. At which point the Buddha did a miracle, and the miracle was, as the Buddha was moving, or the Buddha was stood still, and Angulimala is running towards the Buddha, but it appears to Angulimala as if the Buddha is moving, And he's running as fast as he possibly can, but he's not approaching the Buddha. So this was a miracle that the Buddha performed at the time. And at which point, Angulimala speaks to the Buddha and says, "Stop there, I want to try and approach you. What are you doing? Stop moving." And then the Buddha says, "I'm not running, I'm stood in one place and you're the one who's running." Now, although Angulimala was a murderer, he was an intelligent person. In fact, he was his teacher's best student. So he says, he realizes there must be something in what this person has just said. Because he looks like someone who is of good descent. It looks like this is someone who is a good person, a virtuous person. So there must be some meaning to what he's just said. And so he says, "Well, I've stopped running. You're the one who's running. Why are you then asking me to stop running?" At which point the Buddha replies, "Well, Angulimala, I stopped running in samsara a long time ago. But what about you? You're still running in samsara." And Angulimala realized there was a profound message in this teaching. And so he dropped his sword, got down on his knees, and he asked the Buddha to preach more of this Dhamma. And then the Buddha started preaching. The Buddha started to teach him anicca, dukkha, anatta. At which point Angulimala becomes a sotapanna. So he was a pratakjana before that. An ignoble person becomes a noble person by listening to anicca, dukkha, anatta, by listening to the Buddha's teaching. What the message we need to understand from this story is that to look at ourselves, we always use a reference point. In fact, we were discussing this on our way here. How does one know that they're practicing the path? And there's also a question that's come through as well. How do we know that we are actually practicing the path? Have we become stagnant? Have we stopped moving on the path? This is a question again that people will come across oftentimes. The only accurate indicator is, what are your thoughts compared to yesterday? What are your thoughts compared to last week? When things happen that you don't like, when things come across that used to get into conflicts with, yesterday or the day before or the last week or the last month or perhaps 2 years ago, 3 years ago, how did you used to react to them? What was your state of mind when people came and shouted at you, when people came and said bad things about you, when people lied to you and they got caught out, when you were at a loss, when someone stole your money, when someone took something that belonged to you? What was your state of mind? How much did you suffer inside when something like that happened? But what about today? Are you more at peace with yourself? Do you realize that, well, this is the nature of the world? It's not for me to go and get into conflict with the world. Every time I get into conflict, the reason I get into conflict is because I have this view that the world needs to be the way I want it to be. This is the nitya view of the world, not the anicca view. The nitya view of the world is that things happen in the world to my liking. But when you understand the Dhamma, you realize, well, no, the world is anicca. It doesn't happen to my liking. My liking has nothing to do with what's going on in the world. As long as there are causes, then you get the effect or the result of that. Things are preconditioned, not predestined, preconditioned. So be careful, there are two different words and they have two different meanings. In fact, some people ask me, is everything predestined? No, nothing's predestined. If something were predestined, then you would be born and you'd have that. This is where fate comes in. Some people say, well, life is nothing but fate and I have a destiny. No, that is not the case. You can change where you get to with life. In fact, 2 weeks ago, we had some visitors in the monastery, and there was one guy who approached me, and he said he was a visitor to Sri Lanka, and he at the end of the sermon he came and said, "Venerable sir, in my life I've committed a number of sins. I've done lots of bad things. In fact, I've been to prison twice. I've done things that are unimaginably." A normal person wouldn't think of doing something like this. And he said, I have trouble sleeping at night because I see all these things that happened to me in the past and the things that I did in the past. And these are really bothering me and they're a huge weight on my shoulders. How do I, you know, will I never be able to rectify my errors? Will I never be able to move forward? And I replied, well, what happened in the past belongs to the past. You are not who you were 2 weeks ago. You are not who you were 2 months ago, 2 years ago. In fact, you are not even who you were 2 seconds ago. You are who you are right now. Who are you? Are you not just a body and a mind? Well, if the body is constantly changing, and if your mind is constantly changing, it's just a series of thoughts that come and go, well then who are you? It's like pointing at a flowing river and saying, that's me, just there. The moment you pointed at it, the water in the river has flown down, has moved forward. And you point it again, that's me. Well, where's the me in there? Because the water in the river is constantly flowing. It's not a lake, it's a river. You have the water that is constantly flowing, and you have a body that's constantly changing. So this is why we say the mind is nothing but Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vinyana. It's constantly changing. And therefore, what happens to us is not predestined, but it's predetermined. Predetermined because it's determined by the causes that give you that result. Okay, so it's important that we understand that. When the story I was giving with Angulimala is when Angulimala approached the Buddha, he didn't know the Dhamma, he hadn't listened to the Dhamma, and in fact, having seen the Buddha, he didn't have thoughts of respect. He didn't want to go and worship the Buddha. What he wanted to do was go and kill him. But having listened to the Dhamma, completely different story. Now he wants to venerate the Buddha. He wants to worship the Buddha, and he says, that, you know, this Dhamma that you've just taught me, I've never heard before. It's changed my life. Please accept me as one of your disciples. And I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dhamma, I take refuge in the Sangha. From today onwards, I am one of your disciples. Please accept me, Lord Buddha, as one of your disciples. He said this having listened to the Dhamma, not having seen the Buddha. This is why the Buddha says, so dhammam passati, yo mam passati. Or yo dhammam passati, so mam passati. To see me, you have to see the Dhamma. You can't see me in just by looking at my physical form. So, you know, you might have a Buddha statue at home, or you might go to the temple, you might offer flowers at the altar and worship the Buddha and come home. Do you think you've seen the Buddha in the temple? Where is the Buddha? Is he in the temple? Is he at home? No, he is in the Dhamma. When you see the Dhamma, then you understand the Dhamma. That's when you begin to see the Buddha. When you understand the Dhamma, you have complete conviction in the Dhamma. So this is where you go from faith to conviction. Faith is what we call bhakti in Sinhala, and conviction is what we call shraddha in Sinhala. You move from someone that accepts something by faith, and you take something by conviction. You can only accept something by conviction when it becomes true for you. Just because I believe in something, it doesn't mean you're going to believe in that. You might take it, you might trust me, but you're going to verify that. When you verify, it becomes real for you. Trust, but always verify. This is what you've got to do with friends. And in fact, with the Dhamma as well. Just because you read the Dhamma in the Tripitaka, how do you know whether this is the Buddha's Dhamma? How do you know that, you know, you get a book, someone says, hey, I found this really great video. Or, you know, say these YouTube sermons. Someone approaches you and say, hey, I've been listening to these YouTube sermons, and I think you need to listen to this as well, because I think this is the Buddha's Dhamma. You shouldn't accept it straight away. You shouldn't reject it straight away either. What you should do is listen to that Dhamma, see if it makes sense to you, and does it apply to your own, you know, how does it apply to your own lives, and can you feel raga, dvesha, moha removed from your minds? And that might not happen overnight. It's going to take time, But every time you get to listen to the Dhamma, what change does it impact in your hearts and in your minds? That has to be the indicator for you to understand whether this is the Buddha's Dhamma or not. How does it compare with the Buddha's doctrine? What is the Buddha's doctrine? Paticchasamuppada. Paticchasamuppada teaches us, or dependent origination teaches us about how it is that birth comes into the picture. How is it that we give rise to not just human beings and animals and gods and brahmas, but also the thoughts that we have in our minds. How do they come into life? And every time whatever comes into life, if the end result is dukkha dukkha sankhara dukkha and viparinama dukkha, and if what we understand from the Buddha's Dhamma is this is a teaching that helps us find happiness, well, as long as whatever comes into being gives us a result of dukkha dukkha viparinama dukkha and sankhara dukkha, then we've got to know this is not the Buddha's Dhamma. It's eradicating that has to be the Buddha's Dhamma. So whatever sermon you listen to, whatever book you read on Buddhist teaching, if it doesn't show you how to eradicate suffering permanently, we're not talking about temporary relief from suffering. You can get that when you go to your local GP. You can go to your teacher, you can go to your lawyer, you can go to your best friend, and they can give you temporary relief from suffering. But to get a permanent relief from suffering, there's only one person that can do that for you. Who's that? Yourself. But who gives you the path to do that? That's the Buddha. Only you can do it for yourself. So when you practice this Dhamma, then you listen to the Dhamma, you practice the Dhamma, then you understand this Dhamma is what's going to help me relieve myself from suffering. This Dhamma is what's going to help me find the supreme bliss. That is what we call Nibbana. And therefore, you move from accepting the Dhamma by faith to accepting the Dhamma by conviction. Again, if you go back to the example of learning a math problem at school, say you are looking for a teacher that can help you. There, your friends come and say, "Hey, we know this great teacher. He's a really good guy. He's really good at what he teaches. You should come to his lessons." Well, you can be absolutely guaranteed that not every person you know will find that those classes are the best. It might work for your friends, but it might not necessarily work for you. So how do you work out which teacher is right for you? You go into those lessons, you sit in those classes, you practice what has been taught, and then you apply it into your own lives, and then you work out, this is work for me. How does this apply in my life, and am I finding what it is I'm looking for in my life? Remember, oftentimes we've talked in the past, what is our purpose in life? And it's really straightforward. It's happiness that is the purpose in our lives. No matter what you do in life, you do it to be happy. Do we not? Why do you wake up in the morning? To be happy. Why do you put the kettle on the fire? To be happy. Why do you cook your meals? To be happy. Why do you go to work? To be happy. Why do you study and work hard and learn? You do all of these things, earn money, build a house, make kids, it's all to be happy. So if you can't find happiness in what you're learning, if you can't find happiness in the teaching that is given to you, then you're not going to move from faith to conviction. You take it by faith, you verify it. What is verification? It's the process of applying it to your own examples, to your own life, and then moving from faith to conviction. So when you practice this Dhamma, when you listen to the Dhamma and you start practicing that and putting it into your lives, there comes a point when you realize, hey, it's this Dhamma that's helped me to become happy. It's this Dhamma which I didn't have up until now that's taught me the way to be happy is by letting go. All this time, when I associated people in the world around me, everyone said, hey, go build more, hold on to more things, buy more things, gather more things, make more things, develop. Do lots more things, and that's how you're going to be happy. And you tried doing that all day, every day. You tried doing that, but you realize I'm still looking for happiness. I'm still trying to be happy. Every day I'm building something new. Every day I'm doing something new, and I'm still trying to be happy. When are you going to be happy? When is that day going to be when you're actually happy? When do you stop trying to be happy, and be happy? Every day you're trying to be happy. When are you going to be happy? This is the problem. Because you've gone to all the wrong people asking them, hey, how do I be happy? One person you didn't go to, that was the Buddha. How do I be happy? And he teaches you, let go. Just let go. Stop trying to be happy. Then you'll be happy. We've talked about this plenty of times because, you know, this is what people, this is our purpose in life. If you're not happy, then what's the point of living life? What is the point of living life if you can't be happy, right? So when you realize that it's this Dhamma that's helped me to let go of the things that I used to cling on to, that I used to attach to, and the more I have let go, the less I suffer, the less that I am affected by when things don't work out in my favor, then you realize this Dhamma is the answer to my problem. It's like, say you've been locked in a room, you're trying to get out of that room. You don't know that it's a key that you need to, or say you've got a bunch of keys. There are keys all over the room. You're trying to find the right key that's going to unlock this door. Now people come in and tell you, hey, try that key. And when someone tells you, try that key, you have faith. You walk up to that key, pick the key up, try it in the lock. You turn the key, doesn't work. You put it to a side. Then someone else comes and says, hey, try that key over there. You walk up. And remember, as soon as someone says, and especially if it's a trusted friend, you're going to take it by faith. Yeah, it's probably going to work. Why? Because it's my friend saying it's going to work. So you walk up to that key, pick that key up, try and put it in the lock. Try turn it around. No, the door doesn't open. And you keep trying that. And then again, one fine day, another person comes and says, what about that key over there? You walk up to that key. You, again, by faith, you pick it up, bring it to the lock, turn it, and guess what? The door unlocks. Now, do you need to take by faith that this key is the right key? You don't need to take it by faith anymore. Because now, you know 100%, you know with absolute certainty that this key is the key that unlocks this door. Now you can tell everyone else in the room as well, hey, here's the key that's going to unlock the door. Forget about every other key. This is the key that works. That is someone that's become a sotapanna. He's tried out lots of different things. He's gone after various teachers. But the day you find the key that unlocks your door, and what's this door we're talking about? The door that takes you to happiness. What happiness are we talking about? Happiness which gives you, which stops this rebirth cycle. Happiness from eradicating dukkha-dukkha, viparinama-dukkha and sankhara-dukkha. Happiness that gives you relief from jati dukkha, vyadi dukkha, marna dukkha. Okay? So that is the suffering that comes with decay, suffering that comes with disease, suffering that comes with death, and suffering that comes with being born again and again and again. So once you found that key, then you know by conviction, yes, this is the right key. Now you can tell everyone else as well. Now you become a noble person, you become a satpurusha, you become a kalyanamitra. Because you found that key. What about the person that told you, hey, try this key, I know, because I've tried it. That's what everyone else said. But now, what about that person that gave you that key? You have a feeling of utmost respect towards that person. Because you've been trying to get out of this room for a very, very long time. But you never could find the right key. Because there are lots of keys. Imagine you're up to your knees, there are, you know, this room full of keys. Up to your knees. There's only one key that works. And you found that key. This is what a Buddha gives you. Because how does a Buddha know that this is the right key? He's tried every other key. This is the difference between a Buddha and a Shravaka Buddha. The difference between a Samma Sambuddha and a Shravaka Buddha is that a Samma Sambuddha has tried every single key in the room. A Paccheka Buddha, he tries a few keys. And as if by luck, he gets hold of the right key. He turns it and the door opens. He says, well, and then someone asks, how did you find that key? What does he say? Well, just reach out and, you know, you by random, you're going to pick the right key. And that doesn't work for everybody. Whereas a Sammasambuddha, he has tried every single key and he knows this is the only key that works. All other keys don't work. And a Shravaka Buddha needs the help of a Sammasambuddha to do that. And then you can unlock the door. So when you have found the right key, now you protect that key. Because think the next door is the same key. The door after that is the same key. You have a series of doors you need to cross until you get out of this building. Unfortunately, every door you can use the same key to get to unlock. So now that you found this key, you use that key to unlock every single door in front of you. And then you get out of the building. And the building's on fire. This is why you're trying to get out of it. The fire of what? The fire of jati, the fire of birth, the fire of decay, the fire of disease, and the fire of death. Right? And then the person that showed you this key, you have so much respect towards. And now you accept this person as someone that has helped you in your life, and therefore you have that conviction about that person. And then there are other people who will have passed those doors. You will find other people going through those doors on your way out. This is the Mahasangha. Because they will have also found the right key. And just like you, they use the help of Sammasambuddha to get out of that door. So now you're going to have trust, you're going to have faith in those, you're going to have conviction in those people. So once you have that conviction, you have absolute faith in yourself. Now you see, once you found that key, it doesn't matter if anyone else comes and tells you that is not the right key, you're not going to believe it, are you? You're not going to believe the other person. Why? Because you've tried it yourself and it unlocked the door. So no matter who comes and tells you that's not the right key, in fact, why don't you try another key? You're going to say, no, why should I? I found the right key. I don't need your help now. Because now he knows the path. And it's no matter who comes and says, hey, don't believe that guy, the guy that gave you that key. He says, don't believe in that guy because he's a liar. You're never going to believe him. Why? Because you know that that is the person that helped you get this key to get out of that room. So you have so much faith, so much respect and conviction in that person. What about the people who actually managed to get out of the room? People might come and say, don't believe in those people. You're not going to take their word for it. Why? Because all of them found the right key and they all believe in the right person to get there. So you have absolute conviction in all of them. This is how you have conviction in the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha. The other thing you need to remember is how do you again understand a sotapanna, or how do you recognize a sotapanna? Don't try to recognize sotapanna in people around you. Try and see if you're a sotapanna, not the people around you. Never try to judge the outside person and check, is this a sotapanna? Is this a sakurdagami, anagami? Is this an arahant? Because 99.99% of the time, you're going to be wrong. Don't try to do that. See if you are a sotapanna. See if you have managed to escape the hells. This is the only thing you need to do. Because so what if the other person is a sotapanna? How is that going to help you? If you haven't escaped the four hells, how is that going to help you? Listen to all kinds of dhamma. As long as you know, as long as you have the skill to be able to check if what you are listening helps you to eradicate the fires, extinguish the fires of desire, aversion and delusion, raga, dvesha, moha. As long as that's happening inside you when you listen to any kind of dhamma, continue to listen to that dhamma, because that is the Buddha's teaching. As long as there's someone that can teach you that dhamma, listen to the dhamma. But say, you know, even these sermons, say you've been listening to these sermons for a couple of months now, and then one fine day you switch on Dharma by Buddhabana English, and then you hear me saying, you know, forget about anicca, dukkha, anatta. I was wrong when I told you all of that. What you need to do is to be happy and go into the heavens. Live life in the heavens, because life is really nice over there. You get to eat lots of lovely kinds of food. You get to be with lovely people, you know, with the devas and the brahmas, and life is really glorious there. Stop listening to these sermons from that point forward. Because if that is what I am saying, I am not preaching the Buddha's Dhamma. Every word I say, every sentence I speak, every message I give must help you to eradicate raga, dvesha, moha. If that's not happening, I am not speaking the Buddha's Dhamma. So that should always be your yardstick to measure what you listen to evaluate what you listen to. Okay? So, when you listen to this Dhamma, what's going to happen is, remember, as a ignoble person, as a prithakjana, you used to practice the dasa kusala, the 10 sins, the 10 unwholesome deeds. You used to, it didn't take a lot for you to kill. Well, if you think, no, that's not the case, what about mosquitoes? Isn't that killing? When a mosquito used to come and annoy you, what was, you know, you didn't have to think twice about it. You just slapped them while they were sucking your blood on your arm. Didn't take a second to just, you know, squash them with your hand. Because you didn't even need to think about it. It happened almost automatically. What about when you had to lie to escape a certain problem? Didn't have to think twice about it. Someone comes and asks you, why did you do that? First response, wasn't me. That was your immediate response, because you had no fear, you had no shame in lying. What about when you saw something that you thought, I really like that, I want that? It didn't matter who you had to hurt, who you had to harm, who you had to steal from to get hold of that. This was the kind of person that was a prithakjan. But now, having listened to the Buddha's teaching, where he says, nothing in this world is to your liking, it's just cause and effect. And everything that you go and attach to only brings you dukkha dukkha, vipanam dukkha and sankara dukkha. You begin to realize, well, what have I got to gain by killing, by stealing, by lying, by slandering, by sleeping with the woman next door? What have I got to gain that is going to be my liking, that is going to bring me happiness? Everything that I've so far brought to myself, attached myself to, has only brought me suffering. So why should I go after anything that brings me suffering? My purpose in life is to be happy. But the things I'm bringing towards me, the things I'm going and attaching myself to, is bringing me pain and discomfort and agony and mental anxiety and mental vexation and stress. So why should I do that? That can only happen when you realize when you begin to realize the reality of things. When you begin to realize that, yes, everything is anicca dukkha anatta. So once you've listened to the Dhamma, once you begin to realize, yes, the entire world and everything I've attached myself to so far has only been anicca dukkha anatta, and that has been the reality of life, then you don't have to then, volitionally, you don't have to make a choice about whether you go and kill or do I not kill. It comes from your inside. It comes automatically. Why should I kill? What have I got to gain by killing? You don't have to think, oh, well, I'm not going to steal this thing. You don't have to even think about it. There's going to be an answer that comes from within. What have I got to gain? Why do I have to get this by stealing it? What have I got to gain by lying? What have I got to gain by sleeping with the woman next door? These thoughts and these sentiments are going to start coming inside you. And this is what we call avyapada sankalpana. And the translation that we have in text is the right thoughts. Right thoughts it doesn't necessarily translate this accurately into English. But what you need to understand is, previously you used to have thoughts of anger, thoughts of desire, and thoughts of delusion, thoughts of attaching. But now, having listened to the Dhamma, having practiced the Dhamma, having made it part of your life, the thoughts that come from within you is, what point is there in going and attaching to things that's only going to bring me unhappiness? What is the point in going and fighting with people when all it's going to do is bring me unhappiness? I'll give you a really simple example. I remember when I used to be in employment back when I was in the UK. In the office we had to book our desks to go and sit in the office, because there was a desk sharing system. So every day of the week you would have to have a desk booked in advance, and then you go into the office and you sit there. Now, on some days, when I went into work, I realized that someone else was sat at my desk. And when I say my desk, it was the desk that I had booked. So what I would do at that point is just look around, just scan the room to see if there was another desk that was free. It didn't bother me one bit where I would sit. As long as I had a seat to sit, I had a computer to work on, it didn't matter to me whether it was the seat I had booked or someone, you know, or it was just another spare seat. However, there were other people who would say, hey, don't do that. That's your seat. You've booked that. Kick that guy out. Ask him to go and find another seat. You go and sit where you've booked. Fight for your rights. was what people said. Kick the other guy out. And then I would ask myself, why? I mean, there are plenty of other seats. As long as I can go and sit in another seat, why does it matter where I sit? See, these thoughts start appearing in you without you having to even think about it. But what worldly people will always tell you, what always pruthakjanas will always tell you is, no, fight for it. Argue with people, go fight for it, steal, shout at them, yell at them, kill them. It doesn't matter what you have to do, take what belongs to you. This is the nature of a pruthakjan. So if you are feeling that you've moved away from those kind of sentiments, then you should know that you're practicing the right path. You're on the right path. Because the fires of anger, the fire of desire, and the fire of delusion is not outside. It's inside you. You know when you're angry. How do you know when you're angry? You can feel the fire inside you, can you not? You can feel a fire burning inside you when you're angry. You can feel a fire inside you when you're feeling desirous of something. If you are attracted to a really pretty woman and she appears in front of you, now you can start feeling the fire inside you. It's burning. It's burning you from within. If someone you dislike walk in as well, now again there's another fire. The fire of aversion, the fire of anger. If someone comes and shouts at you, how would you react now compared to when you first started to listen to these sermons? Do you react differently when people come and shout at you? Think about your workplace. When, you know, if you're still in employment and if someone comes and says, hey, this is, why have you done that? This is not what I asked you to do. Your initial reaction before you listen to this Dhamma would have been, no, this is what you asked me to do and I'm going to fight for it. I'm going to defend myself. And it doesn't matter what I have to tell you, I'm gonna fight for my place. But now you are a lot more flexible. But now you're willing to listen. You're willing to take a step back, and you're even willing to realize that, you know, you're beginning to feel, I feel sorry for you that you're feeling so stressed out. Rather than trying to defend yourself, you're thinking, how can I help you right now? Because I can see that there's a fire burning inside you. How can I help you? Whereas before, you were like, no, I don't care what you say, I'm right, you're wrong. These are indicators for you to realize if you're going on the right path. And the other indicator that you can also use is, are you beginning to see anicca dukkha anatta in the world around you? And what do I mean by that? Again, I'll give you an example. I remember when we were at the airport once, and I was with someone else. We were at Heathrow, and they were flying back to Sri Lanka, and I was with these people. I was pushing a trolley, and in this trolley we had their luggage. And this person told me, wait a bit, I need to go and check something out and I'll be right back. Now, he thought that I didn't know how to operate the trolley. So he said, you know, obviously, as you will know, if you've pushed a trolley at the airport, for as long as you have suppressed the lever, it keeps moving. As long as you stop, you know, you let go, then the trolley stops moving, right? That's the braking mechanism for the trolley. So he says, let go and it'll stop. And then I said, isn't that what we're all trying to do? You let go, and then you stop. So what I'm trying to say is, why can't you see Nibbana in a trolley? Why can't you see anicca dukkha anatta in a trolley? Why can't you see anicca, are you trying to tell me that there is no anicca dukkha anatta in this laptop? Why can't you see anicca dukkha anatta in a falling leaf from a tree? Every single thing you can see around you can teach you anicca dukkha anatta. Every single thing that you see around you, whether it's a tap dripping water, one drop every second, you can see anicca dukkha anatta there. Whether it's a chair, whether it's a handkerchief, whether it's, you know, you working in the kitchen and chopping a carrot up, you can see anicca dukkha anatta there. But of course, you can only do that if you understand Anicca Dukkha properly. This is why the state of Sotapanna is often described as Dahasak Nain Pratimandita, which means in English, the meaning of that in English is, if I try and translate that, is you are endowed with the ability to see the world according to the theory that you've just learned, according to the philosophy. What philosophy is this that we're talking about? The philosophy of Anicca Dukkha Anatta. So once you begin to see Anicca Dukkha Anatta, you can look at the entire world, you can look at the entire universe, and everywhere you look, there's going to be a teacher. This is why when, of course, we were discussing on the way to the temple, to practice this part, you don't need to be anywhere special. You don't need to be in a monastery. You don't need to be in a temple. You don't need to be a recluse. You don't need to run away from the world. Because if you run away from the world, what are you going to see Anicca Dukkha Anatta in? If it's the world that we are attached to, and it's the world that we need to see as Anicca Dukkha Anatta, if you run away from the world, now what are you going to look at? Whose Anicca Dukkha Anatta are you going to look at? It's the world you need to look at as being Anicca Dukkha Anatta. But if you run away from the world, what are you going to look at then? This is what you need to realize. Now, even when I'm in the monastery, you know, there'll often be times when I need to reflect on Anicca Dukkha Anatta and the things that I do on a day-to-day basis, the way I react to certain situations. I mean, I'll give you a really simple example. Yesterday, the day before, and the day before that, we were in Matara, and we went there for a sermon, or a series of sermons, and we went on alms for food. And so every day when we went on food, we took a different route. So the first day, people were really nice to us. They were so happy that they had monks visiting them for alms. And people would, you know, some people, they were running to catch a bus to get to work. They would abandon that journey and they would come back and run home so that they could get some food and serve the monks, offer some alms to the monks. But the following day was a different story. There were one of my associate monks who went on alms, and he came back and said, "Today was a really interesting experience." And I asked him, "Why? What happened?" And he said, "When I went for alms, there was this elderly lady whose voice he could hear. She was bedridden. Apparently, she couldn't even come out from her home because she was very poorly and she was bedridden. She was looking out the window, and having seen my associate monk, was shouting at him, saying, 'What have you come here for? Why don't you just go away? We have nothing to offer you. Just go away. Why should we feed you?'" Shouting out things like that. So, and he just carried on. But what he came back and said was, "That was a really good experiment for me to check how do I respond when people shout at me. How do I respond when I get insults from people? When people come and say bad things about me? When people come and lie to me and then I find out people are actually lying to me?" These are all experiments for you to do on yourself. Now, and you think being a monk is, you know, the world's going to be all a bed of roses? Is that why everyone wants to? That's why everyone wants to be a monk? People see a monk going on alms with an alms bowl, you know, very calm, very cool, very collected, and people think, "Oh, what a lovely lifestyle that is. I'd love to be a monk." Well, you've got to be a monk to see what being a monk is like. You know, sometimes when you go on alms, you're a beggar when you're going on alms. You know, people can do whatever they like to you. They can put, if they wanted, they could put soil in your alms bowl, could they not? What would you do in that situation? If someone came and put mud into your alms bowl, what would you do? How would you react to that? Would you start shouting at them? Would you hit them? Would you slap them? Or would you just accept whatever has been offered? Walk a few hundred yards turn the bowl upside down, dispose of the things that you can't eat, and then continue. How you react in that situation is how you can determine how far you've gone on the path. Because if you at that point start shouting at that person, or even for one single moment, if for one second you feel, how could that person do like that to me? You still need to practice the path. Remember, an arahant would not, for one tiny bit, for one microsecond, for one millisecond, for one microsecond, not going to be upset about what happened, if that was what happened when they went round on arms. Now, this is what I want to, the reason I want to share this story with you is, so this other monk who then continued, and I want to share this story with you because what he did was really great. So he walked past this house, and then as he went again about another 200 meters, there was another man who came out in a wheelchair. All he did was he pointed at, so apparently when you were walking down this street, you could take a left, and then there would be a small alley which you can go up, and there would be more houses that way. So this man on a wheelchair, he points at my associate monk and he says, this is where you need to be going. He didn't speak at that point. So he continues on that path and takes the alley and then goes. And you know what this guy did after that? He, at the top of his voice, he starts shouting, there's a monk coming round for alms. Please offer him whatever you guys have. This is a great opportunity for all of us in our village. Please offer whatever you have to this venerable monk. So he starts shouting this. He's on a wheelchair, he can't do anything else, but he did the best he could. And I think it's even fair to say, of all the people that would have gathered merits on that day, it's possibly true that it was that person that acquired the most merits. Just by doing that. Just by giving the message to everyone, there's a monk approaching, offer what you have. And so this monk goes up, he takes alms, and then on his way back, he comes across that old lady's house again. And you know what he did at that point? He walks up to that woman's window where she's on the bed, and he can see him from there. He looks at her and says, may the Noble Triple Gem bless you. May you attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. He says, Nibbana Paramasukhaṁ Sukhittaravetva. He wishes her well. And then she just stares at the monk. She brings her hands together and says, Sadhu Sadhu. That monk was able to transform that woman's life just by being collected, by being calm, by not retaliating to what that woman said, but rather by looking at his own mind and seeing, do I fight with her or do I be kind and do I be generous to her? Do I realize that this is nothing but cause and effect? The reason that woman acted in that way would have been because he would have done the same thing. The reason that man came in his wheelchair and gave him this monk directions was because there would have been a time when this monk would have done the same thing to that man, showed him the right path. This is where you need to go for alms, for food, for whatever. There was another monk that we went with, and when we were at the temple, there was this dog that was at the temple, and often he would come to us and stare at us and then start barking and then go away. This dog used to do this several times. And then this monk asks me, why is that dog acting like that? He's always coming, staring at us and then barking. And then I said, well, why did you do that to the dog many lifetimes ago? You tell me the answer to that and then you'll find the answer to your question. This life that we live is nothing but give and take. You give, you get what you give, what you've given. It's just a give and take, it's a give and take, it's a give and take. Sasaraganudin is what we call. I think in a future sermon we will give more examples and discuss this in more detail. But the reason I brought this story here is to show you, how do you know if you're on the right path? And also to reiterate the point, you don't need to let go of lay life, become a monk to start practicing the path. or to continue practicing the path. Practice the path wherever you are right now, at this moment in time. The path becomes your teacher and the path becomes your facilitator. The Dhamma is what will help you get to where you need to go. As long as you are practicing Anicca Dukkha Anatta, because that's all the Buddha taught us to do. He didn't say do anything else. He just said practice Anicca Dukkha Anatta. He didn't say once you become a Sotapanna, now go up and read the Tripitaka and now study the Satta Sambojjhanga, now study the Sattis Bodhipakshika Dhamma. He didn't say any of that. He didn't say now go and read Abhidhamma. He didn't say any of that. But that's what people are trying to do these days. All the things that the Buddha said to do, people don't do. All the things that the Buddha didn't advise to do, that's what people want to do. They want to find a new way to attain Nibbana. Let's not complicate things. Let's keep it simple. Isn't life complicated enough? Why are we trying to complicate the path to happiness? The path to Nibbana as well? Isn't why you're trying to move away from life and attain Nibbana because life is complicated already? So what if you now complicate the path to Nibbana as well? Where have you got to go after that? You either have to live in this world or you have to get out of this world. To get out of this world, you have to practice the path to Nibbana. You're trying to do that because the path in life, the path to happiness in happiness, within inverted commas, in life is really complicated. And you realize that it's not a happiness that I'm ever going to get. This is why you choose the path to Nibbana. And now you complicate that as well. Now what have you got left? Nothing. You have no alternative. So keep it simple. And therefore, when you can begin to see the world around you and you see Anicca Dukkha Anatta, when you can... Now, this is why I'm being careful. I don't want to... You see, what sometimes people do is... human beings are a really funny kind of animal. This is because what human beings normally do is... Remember, we all have this sense of ego in us, right? Mane. For as long as we have ego within us, we always want to compare ourselves to somebody else. We always want to compare ourselves to somebody else to see, am I their equal? Am I better than them? Am I lower than them? You're always comparing this. This is always what we're doing. Until you become an arahant. Now, I'm not saying, therefore, if you're comparing yourself, then you should be locked up in a cell. That's not what I'm saying. Because this is the nature of this disease. Ego is a disease. As long as we accept that, let's treat that disease. Let's accept that we have a problem and let's treat that problem, okay? There's no point running away from the problem because then you're never treating it. So as long as we accept that we have this ego that we are fighting with, then we've got to accept that what we are always doing is measuring ourselves with somebody else. So what happens is, when you listen to a sermon that teaches you, this is how you see Anicca Dukkha Anatta in a trolley. This is how you see Anicca Dukkha Anatta in a falling leaf from a tree. This is how you see Anicca Dukkha Anatta in a dripping tap. Then people listen to this, they learn this, and what happens then is they go to their fellow mates and go, hey, I know how to see Anicca Dukkha Anatta in this, that and the other. And then they're also unable to really know whether they've understood the problem. Because what's happened is, what they've done is they've asked the teacher to solve 100 problems for them. 100 different problems for them. You memorize all the 100 problems. Now you go around telling everyone, hey, I know how to solve problem number 56. I know how to solve problem number 25. I also know how to solve problem number 98. What happens when you get given problem 101? Now you're stuck. There are only so many things you see on a day-to-day basis around you. You see vehicles come and go. You see people crossing the road. You see the sunrise. You see the sunset. You see something cooking on the fire. Okay. You see your furniture. You see plants growing up and animals around you. So, whoever comes to you and says, here's how you see Anicca Dukkha Anatta in everything that they see around them, people are going to fall into this false. They're going to fall into this deception that yes, I'm now a Sotapanna, and I can't tell you how many times I've had people like that who come up to me and say, I can see Anicca Dukkha Anatta in everything. How do you know? And then they say, well, I can see this, I can see that, I can see this. And then I ask him, well, what about this? Can you tell me anicca dukkha anatta in that? I'll come back later. See, the problem is not that they don't know how to see anicca dukkha anatta in that. The problem is they think they've become a sotapanna. And then what does someone do once they become a sotapanna? Now they go and start meditating. And they think, I no longer need to listen to the Dhamma. This is the problem. And then, because, you know, you listen to these sermons, and these sermons say the only way to become a sotapanna is to listen to Dhamma. And then once you become a sotapanna, now you go and practice the Dhamma by practicing meditation and so on and so forth. So, again, because of this ego, it's very easy to fall into that trap where people think, I am now a sotapanna, I no longer need to listen to Dhamma. What a waste. What a shame. When they could have just continued listening to Dhamma, and where they hadn't attained that noble, you know, where they hadn't become a sotapanna, they could have. One more sermon, two more sermons, maybe three more sermons. But what they don't do that. They stop three sermons short. And what happens? They don't attain that fruit. This is such a shame. Yesterday when I was at a sermon, I said, I don't like preaching. I like listening. My favorite pastime is not preaching the Dhamma, it's listening to the Dhamma. And this is why up until the day I become an Arahant, I will always listen to the Dhamma, and that will be the thing I like to do most. Because in preaching, you're preaching what you know, you're preaching what you can understand. In listening, you can learn new things, you can listen to things that you've never heard before. Someone else has done the hard work. All you have to do is go and pluck the fruits from the tree. Someone else has planted the seed, they've watered the tree, they've added fertilizer, all you have to do is pluck the fruit. Whereas when you're preaching, you have to plant the seed, you have to water, you have to put the fertilizer, and you have to wait for it to grow. And then go and pluck the fruit. So this is what you need to be careful about. Having said that, this is how you can, you know, how one can check if they have become a sotapanna. But always use your measuring sticks should always be how much desire, aversion and delusion, raga, dvesha, moha, do I have today compared to yesterday, compared to last week, compared to last month, compared to last year. And the only way to do that is by putting it into everyday life examples. So don't run away from life. Live life and then keep practicing and keep applying the theory until one day comes when no matter what happens, you're not shaken. No matter, you know, say if someone, you when you go home today and you find that someone had come over and they had completely destroyed your place, turned the entire place upside down, you've had robbers, you had burglars. How are you going to feel at that point? Will you be ready to accept that? If not, then there's still more you need to do. But the same thing happened 2 years ago, you would react differently. You would feel an intense surge of anger inside your heart, in your mind. But today, that might not be so bad. You might begin to think, oh, I'm sure I would have done something similar to that person back then, you know, at some point in samsara. This is now payback time. I've just got to accept whatever happens to me. See, just being able to look at the world like that, you are at peace within yourself. Isn't that what we're looking for? Happiness and peace within ourselves. So as long as you can find that happiness and peace within yourself, you know that this is the Dhamma that helped you get there. This is the teacher that gave me the Dhamma to help me get there. And here's the Mahasangha who are practicing that path, and who has taken the message from the Buddha and are preaching that Dhamma on a day-to-day basis. So this is what we need to think about. We've had a few questions come through. Everyone here are so eager to achieve at least the status of sotapanna. How can we do that? Is that by following the way of Dhamma? So my question is, what should we do to follow the way of Dhamma? Good to go. So my question is, what should we do to follow the way of Dhamma? Okay. How can we know that we are correctly following the way of Dhamma? And what is actually meant by practicing anicca dukkha anatta? So isn't fate more or less similar to karma? In a previous sermon, the time of Lord Buddha, there was a monk who had learned Buddhism since three Lord Buddhas before but not achieved at least the state of Sotapanna. To follow the way of Dhamma, we have to study the lessons of Buddhism. So my question is, just by studying the lessons of Dhamma, can we one day achieve the state of Sotapanna? Okay. So let's take a few of those questions together, because they're all quite a lot of them are interrelated. And then before we conclude, I will also I think there was another question that was posted a few days ago, and depending on time we will go back to that as well. So everyone here are so eager to achieve at least the state of Sotapanna. How can we do that? Is that by following the way of Dhamma? Is that by following the way of Dhamma? What should we do to follow the way of Dhamma? Okay. So what do we mean by the way of Dhamma? What do we mean by following the way of Dhamma? See, when the Buddha describes the Four Noble Truths, which encapsulates everything we need to attain Sotapanna, Sakudagami, Anagami and Arahat, to attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, that's all we need, the Four Noble Truths. Remember, he gives us a path. He says, understand the first noble truth of dukkha, understand the second noble truth of the cause for suffering, the dukkha samudaya, understand that it's eradicating attachment, that is the cessation of suffering, the third noble dukkha, the third noble truth. And finally, this is the path to eradicating the cause for suffering, or the cause for suffering, which is attachment. And he teaches us the eightfold path, Arya Ashtangika Marga. So this, the Arya Ashtangika Marga, is the way of the Dhamma. For as long as you're practicing the Arya Ashtangika Marga, or the noble eightfold path, then you are practicing what you need to become a Sotapanna. You are practicing the path that's going to get you to become a Sakurdagami. You are practicing the path to become an Anagami, and you are practicing the path to become an Arahant. There is nothing else you need to do. It's just practicing that path. Now, where does this path begin? It begins with Sammaditti. So, in fact, why don't we discuss the Noble Eightfold Path a little bit? What is Sammaditti? Remember, Sangma comes from the joining of the two words Sam and Ma. Now I'll need to use the science of etymology here, etymology, and use the meanings, so the singular meanings of or the singular and Pali meanings of these two words that make up this phrase. Sang is avidya trushna, avidya being delusion or ignorance, and trushna being attachment. The coming together of attachment and ignorance, and the result of ignorance and attachment, which is kick-starting the paticca-samuppada process, the dependent origination process, is where dukkha comes out. Once you put whatever you put into paticca-samuppada, the outcome is going to be jara marna shoka parideva dukkha domanam supayasa sambhava. Evametasa kevalasa dukkha kandasa samudaya hoti. So this is in Pali. Whatever you put through the paticca-samuppada process, this is what you're going to get. So the paticca-samuppada process is like a machine. Imagine there's a machine. Whatever you put into it, out comes Jara marna shoka parideva dukkha domanasa upayasa sambhavanti. Outcome suffering. Let's take suffering as a collective word for all that dukkha domanasa upayasa sambhavanti, shoka parideva and so on. Okay? Let's take suffering and we can describe these terms later more broadly. Remember, again, always remember, I always want to try and keep this sermon simple. The reason I want to keep it simple is, let's not try to overcomplicate this. Because if you try to overcomplicate this, then the path becomes very difficult. This is what we've been doing all this time in samsara, overcomplicating it. Remember, it's been 2650 years since the Lord Buddha's parinibbana. The Lord Buddha came past about 500,000 Lord Buddhas. And, well, what about you and I? Did we not come past all of them as well? What about the Buddhas before that? So we came past all this and we have come such a long time in samsara. It would be wrong for us to think that we have not sat in front of a Buddha and listened to his Dhamma. I'm sure, and I can absolutely guarantee that we will all have sat in front of the Buddha, listened to his Dhamma, but gone away and not done what he asked us to do. We would have done everything else but what he asked us to do. This is why, and in fact I'll pick up another question that was posted here in the previous sermon. At the time of Lord Buddha there was a monk. In the previous sermon it was said that at the time of Lord Buddha, there was a monk who had learned Buddhism since three Lord Buddhas before, but not achieved at least the state of Sotapanna. So he's talking about Potila. He's talking about the monk Potila. And they even said, to follow the way of Dhamma, we have to study the lessons of Buddhism. You see, studying and learning is one thing. Applying it into your lives and understanding it is something else. If you don't practice, if you don't understand, then learning is not going to help you. Of course you have to learn. You have to learn, but you have to learn to understand. If you don't learn, if you learn for the sake of learning, then it's just going to be knowledge. It's not going to be understanding. Knowledge is one, understanding is something else. So to come to understanding, first you learn. What you've learned becomes knowledge. When you apply knowledge into your own lives, then it becomes understanding. Where we stop is at knowledge. That's the problem. Because, as the Buddha says, sabbarasam dhammarasam jinati. Of all the tastes that there is, of all the delicacies there is, of all taste would be the most literal translation, but I'm trying to think of a more appropriate term. Of all the pleasures, let's take it that way. Of all the pleasures there is, the pleasure of learning the Dhamma, the pleasure of associating the Dhamma, is the utmost pleasure. So the Buddha says that it's both a blessing and a warning. Remember, he gives us a warning as well. What is the warning? If you simply listen to the Dhamma to understand, to acquire knowledge, but not to apply it, there's a problem. This is why when the monk Potila came to the Buddha and said, Venerable Lord Buddha, in the time of three Lord Buddhas before you, and now as well, I have listened to the Dhamma, I have learned the Dhamma, and I have a lot of knowledge about the Dhamma. In fact, I have complete knowledge in the full Tripitaka. Okay? And he waits for a response from the Buddha. He repeats this because the Buddha does not respond. The Buddha remains silent. And he repeats it and he says, Lord Buddha, as I just said before, In this samsara, oftentimes I have come past Buddhas and I have learned their Dhamma and I have lots of knowledge about the Buddha's teaching. He says this a second time and he says it a third time. And having not received a response from the Buddha, he gets up and starts to walk away. And this is when the Buddha says tuccha poti. So, you know, tuccha being a word of insult. He uses this word to get Potila to reflect on what it is that he's been doing up until this point in samsara. Because remember, where he stopped, where Potila stopped was listening to the Dhamma, learning the Dhamma, acquiring knowledge but not applying it into his life, and therefore turning knowledge into understanding. Because he didn't do that, he couldn't attain the state of Sotapanna. To attain the state of Sotapanna, at least the state of Sotapanna, remember, Yoniso Manasikara is one thing that is absolutely essential. Yoniso Manasikara is nothing but applying the Dhamma into your own lives. So it doesn't matter what age you are, whether you're 14, 15, or 11, or whether you're 45 or 30. It doesn't matter what age you are. You have certain experiences in life. You will have a collection of examples and your own personal experiences. You know, things that you have seen, things that you've heard, things that you've tasted, you've felt, how you've transacted with other people that you've come across, how you've dealt with them. All of these situations, you have to apply the Dhamma and see what outcome you get from them. Unless you do that, it's only going to be knowledge. It's not going to be an understanding. And in fact, I will repeat the Buddha's warning at this point, which is what we do sometimes is when we begin to feel that this Buddha Dhamma is so delicious, it's so pleasurable, I enjoy learning the Buddha Dhamma. What can happen is people start taking detours. Instead of doing what the Buddha asked, which is practice anicca dukkha anatta, you start taking detours. You go learning the Abhidhamma, you go learning about how, you know, the rupas come into being, how the mind comes into being, how the mind starts, how the mind continues, how the mind stops. You start looking at, kind of really, really deep concepts in Buddhism, like Abhidhamma, for example. There's nothing wrong with that. But the problem is, that's not going to help you attain Nibbana. You can only attain Nibbana by... You see, think of it this way, right? Why are we still in samsara? It's because of our attachment. Our attachment and our ignorance. Avidya tanha. It's because of attachment and ignorance we are still in samsara. Do we have an attachment to Chitta Viti? Do we have an attachment to how the rupas come into being? Do we have an attachment to how the thought objects work? No, our attachments are to the sights we see. Our attachments are to the things that we hear with our ears, to the things that we see with our eyes, to the things that we feel. Our five senses. And the Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vinyana that we collect through our five senses and through our mind. These are the things that we are attached to. That's why he says Panchapadana Kanda Dukkha. These are the things that we cling on to, the five clinging aggregates that bring us suffering. So if these are the things that we are attached to, that brings us suffering, then what brings suffering? Attachment brings suffering. That's why it's called the Dukkha Samudaya. These are the things that bring us suffering. Then, where do we need to focus on to remove, to eradicate that suffering? It's looking at the attachment that we have to the things that we are attached to, which is the Panchupadana Skandha. So this is what we need to analyze. This is what we need to focus on. Why? Because our life is limited. We don't know when our last breath is going to be. We don't know how long we're going to be alive, how much longer we're going to be alive for. So, we have the Dhamma, while yes we have the Abhidhamma, while yes we have 84,000 different sutras that teach us how to attain Nibbana, if you've understood anicca dukkha anatta, then before your heart beats for the last time, which could be today, which could be in the next hour, which could be this hour, which could be before you get up from wherever you sat down right now and listen to this sermon. For me, it could be before I end this sermon, right? Before that happens, what we need to do is apply anicca dukkha anatta. That's all we need to attain Nibbana. The Buddha's wisdom was infinite. There's no limit to his wisdom. This is why the Buddha was able to talk about everything there was in this universe. He could talk to us about other planets, other solar systems, other universes, other galaxies. He could teach us about karma vipaka, right? He could teach us about this world. He could teach us about how people are born and how people die. And he could teach us about all of these things. And he could all even teach us about, you know, at a really subtle level, how the chittas work, how the chaitasikas work, how the rupas work, and all of these things. But he says all of that, and he then finally says, all you need to do is eradicate raga, dvesha, moha. To what? The panchopadana skandha. If you do that, and that alone, that's enough to attain Nibbana. So, practicing the path is practicing the Noble Eightfold Path. So when someone gets into Samma Ditti, which is Sang being avidya trushna, as I said before, attachment and delusion, and Ma is to remove yourself from that, to distance yourself from that process, then you come into this view, this right view, that eradicating attachment and delusion is what's going to bring me happiness, is what's going to bring me relief and cessation from the dukkha. Okay? When you have Samma Ditti, then what you do from that point forward is Samma Sankalpa. Right thoughts. And that's the right thoughts that we discussed a few moments ago. Before, you used to have thoughts of anger, you used to have thoughts of desire, you used to have thoughts of attachment to the world. But now, because you have Samma Ditti, which is ignorance and attachment is what brings me suffering. Well, if you want relief from suffering, then you know that what you need to do is eradicate attachment and delusion. So now that's what you're working towards. And you also understand that no matter whatever resulted from the process of avidya trushna only gave you dukkha dukkha viparinama dukkha and sankhara dukkha. Once you have this basic, this fundamental view, this fundamental philosophy, once you understand that, then automatically the thoughts that you have are thoughts about letting go of this world. The thoughts you have are thoughts about letting go of attachment, and thoughts about letting go of desire, and letting go of anger. So that is Samma Sankalpa. Then you move into Samma Vacha, which is this right speech. Right speech is about abstaining from lying, abstaining from slander, abstaining from harsh speech. Okay? So, previously, when you thought this world was such a pleasurable place to be in, you wanted to be the best in this world, and you didn't care what happened to other people. It didn't matter what you had to do to get to that point. So you were readily available to lie. You were happy to lie to people. You could lie to someone. Just take a simple example. You go to the shop to buy something. In fact, this happened to us when we were on the expressway going towards Mathura. As we approached the toll gates, which are those gates where they charge you a fee on the expressway, As we were taking the exit at Mathura, so we hand over this chit on which it says where we entered, so that they can charge us the fee, having calculated how far we've travelled, right? So we give this chit to the person that's operating the gates, and we are now waiting for him to tell us how much the cost is, what the cost is. He gives us this chit again with a 50 rupee note. We haven't even paid him yet. And we are wondering, why are you giving us money? We owe you money. So we had to pay him, it was 450 rupees for the distance that we travelled from Horana to Mathura. So 450 rupees was the charge for that. But this guy, he gives the chit back with a 50 rupee note. So in his mind, he's thinking, we've already paid him 500 rupees, right? when we haven't. Now, if we didn't have this Dhamma, what do you think we would have done, or the driver would have done? He would have happily taken the 50 rupee note, taken the chit and said, thank you very much, goodbye, and then driven away. Now, that man is 450 rupees at a loss. When he counts his money at the end of the day, he's going to find he's 450 rupees short. And then he's going to have to put that money in there. That's 450 rupees that he could have taken home, given to his family, helped someone else out, or fed his family, or paid his rent, or paid his mortgage, or paid his water, electricity, whatever, right? But because we have, and that's what most people would do. Unfortunately, that is the reality. That's what most people would do. It doesn't matter whether that money is yours or not. You're happily, you're willing to take it. So when we said, no, actually we didn't pay you, here's the money that we need to pay you. So he's asking us, are you sure? Because I thought you paid us money. And then we said, yes, we are absolutely sure. We didn't pay you money. Please accept this. When, you know, second time he's asking us, are you sure you paid us? We could have easily said, actually yes, we are mistaken. We did pay you and you gave us change. Thank you, let's go. That would be lying. Lying for what? To save 450 rupees. Well, with the 50 pounds he's given us, with the 50 rupees he's given us, now it's 500 rupees. To save 500 rupees, I'm lying to that person. But when you understand, rupees and cents are not really all that. Why do I steal from this person when that person is suffering so much? You know, why is he doing that job wherever he sat? At the toll gates, you know, they don't have air conditioners there. They might have a small pedestal fan or something. You know, he's in the burning heat there. He's waiting, you know, vehicles coming and going. That's all, you know, that's his job. How could you even do something like that to someone like that? But for that, you need to have thoughts of letting go. You need to have Samma Sankappa to get to Samma Vacha. Otherwise, what you normally do is lie to people. You use words of slander, which is backbiting. You know, he said this about you, she said this about you, that sort of thing. Kelam. And then you have harsh words. Words that make another person feel bad. Words that hurt another person's feelings. So, Samma Vacha. Then you move to Samma Kammanti. The things that you do. So, you refrain from killing. You refrain from stealing, and you refrain from sensual misconduct. So when you practice refraining from stealing, refraining from killing, and refraining from sensual misconduct, what you are practicing is Samma Kammanta. So Samma Ditti, Samma Sankappa, Samma Vacha, Samma Kammanta, Samma Vayam. Right? So Samma Vayam is right effort. Or Samma Ajiva, sorry. Right livelihood. So what is Samma Ajiva? Samma Ajiva is dedicating your life. Sorry, did I get that wrong? Yes, it's actually Samma Vayam. Samma Vayam is right effort. Right effort for what? Right, so the Buddha talks about four different types of right effort. Any good things you've done in the past, repeat them. Make effort to repeat them. What about good deeds you haven't done in the past? Make efforts to do them. New good deeds you haven't done in the past, do them. So if you haven't given Dhani, if you haven't offered food to the monks ever in your past, then make time, find time to go and do it. If you've never worshipped the Buddha, find time to do that. If you never practiced meditation, find time to do that. Make an effort to do that. Because all of these things are good deeds. If you've never been able to attain the first jhana, then make effort to do that. If you've not attained the Sotapanna Phala, make effort to do that. So you're making efforts to do things that you, the good deeds you haven't done so far. Then you abstain from the sins that you've done. So if you've stolen in the past, then again, don't worry about the past. What you need to worry about is what you're doing now. Who you were in the past is gone. You can't bring that moment back no matter what you do. Right? Just like that man who came and spoke to me at the end of the sermon 2 weeks ago, no matter how much I talk with him, I can't change what happened in the past. I don't know what bad deeds he might have done, but he can't change who he was in the past. The only thing you can change is what happens in the future. You can either choose to continue to do what you did in the past or be a completely different person. But now, whoever, you know, as you're practicing the Noble Eightfold Path, you're practicing right view, you're practicing right thoughts, you're practicing right speech, you're practicing right action, and you're practicing right effort. So you're doing new deeds that you haven't done in the past, new good deeds. And any bad deeds you've done in the past, you abstain from them. And any bad deeds you've not done in the past, you make sure not to do them. Okay? And then, Samma Ajiva. Samma Ajiva is about dedicating your life to eradicating Raga, Dvesha, Moha. For as long as you do that, which is constantly checking your thoughts, your actions, and your efforts, and your speech, you're constantly checking all of these. It's like a radar. How's my speech today? What sort of things did I do today? You can do this when you wake up in the morning. You can do this just before you get to bed. How did I conduct my speech? How did I conduct my actions? How did I conduct my thoughts today? Did I do bad things? Did I do good things? And constantly being aware of that and constantly making sure you're aiming at the right target. That's Samma Ajiva. And then Samma Sati, which is having right mindfulness. So constantly focusing your mind on the right things. This is to listen to the Dhamma, to purifying your mind, to practicing to practice in the path, practicing meditation, and also the Sadhana Satipatthana. That is right mindfulness, which is where you're constantly aware of your thoughts. Why am I going somewhere? Why am I talking? Why am I walking? Why am I speaking? Why am I lifting my arm up? Why am I sitting down? Why am I getting up? You know, 24/7 you can focus. So, you know, this is what practice in the path is. When someone wants to know how do you become a sotapanna and how do you follow the way of Dhamma, this is exactly what you need to be doing. 24/7, 365 days a year, always focus on your mind. What is your mind doing? If Nibbana is raga ke, desha ke, moha ke, Nibbana, eradicating desire, eradicating aversion and eradicating delusion, if that is Nibbana, and that is Nibbana, not if that is Nibbana, that is Nibbana. According to whom? According to the Buddha. Because that is Nibbana, then constantly and always regularly focusing your mind on what's going on in your mind right now. Because where does Raga, Dvesha, Moha happen? Does that happen in your body or in your mind? It happens in your mind, right? It's nothing to do with the body. It's the mind that is responsible for Raga, Dvesha, Moha. So for as long as you focus on your mind and check every moment, these thoughts that I'm having now, are they to do with raga, are they to do with dvesha, are they to do with moha? Constantly focus on that and remove the raga, dvesha, moha from your mind. Then you are walking the path to Nibbana. And then finally, Samma Samadhi. So when you practice this path, you are now able to concentrate. You are now able to concentrate and practice right concentration. Because previously, your mind was always running everywhere. Your mind was running towards the bad things. You know, when something happened that you didn't like, your mind was always ready to fight. Your mind was always ready to get into an argument. Your mind was always ready to get into a conflict with somebody else. But now, I mean, you know, think about yourselves when you're in the monastery. Think about the things that happen. Think about other fellow monks who might do things you like, who might do things you don't like. What about when you go for alms? If you get served food that you really like, how is your mind working at that point? Right? If you're not 24/7, if you're not a security guard for the things that come through your eyes, your ears, your nose, your tongue, what do normal people do? They're security guards for what? Objects in the world. But what do Aryans do? They're a security guard for their minds. See, we're both doing the same thing. But worldly people are security guards for all these physical things in the outside world. Whereas Aryans are security guards for the things that go on in their mind. Constantly focusing on what goes on in the mind. Okay? So when you're able to focus on what goes on in your mind, and when you're able to watch your mind, like a watchman.
And whenever desire comes in, fight. Whenever anger comes in, fight. Whenever delusion comes in, fight. Fight and fight until you win. You don't give up. You never give up. And you keep fighting. And then, when you are able to now settle your mind, unlike before where you sat down for meditation, for example, you know, think about 2-3 years ago, if you have ever had a chance to practice meditation. When you sit down to meditate, what are the things that came into your mind? It would sometimes be the things you like to eat. It would be things that you like to watch, like watching movies. It would be things that you used to speak with your friends, right? Things you used to do with your friends, playing games, okay, computer games, or watching TV, right? These are the things that always came into your mind. So you were never able to concentrate. Your mind was always running, like a monkey, jumping from one tree to another. But now that you have practiced this path of right view, right mindfulness, right actions, right speech, and everything you are doing, you are trying to eradicate raga, dvesha, moha. The thoughts that come into your mind now are less to do with raga, dvesha, moha, and more to do with eradicating raga, eradicating dosha, eradicating moha. So they are to do with prajna or wisdom. And therefore, when you sit down to meditate, for instance, you don't have to sit down to meditate, by the way. Whenever you are trying to focus your mind, those thoughts are going to be about Vita Raga Vita Dosa Vita Moha, which is non-desire, non-anger or non-aversion and non-delusion. And that helps you again to come to Samadhi. This is why it's a wheel. It's not a list. The Noble Eightfold Path is not a list of things. It's a wheel. So once you go round the wheel, how many times do you do this every day? All the time. You're going round in this wheel. And so, say for example, you wake up in the morning and someone walks up to you and they start shouting at you. Previously, you used to shout back. You used to say things to hurt their feelings. That was Michcha Vacha. But now you have Sammaditti, right view. So now your response is going to be Samma Vacha. You abstain from using bad words. You abstain from lying. You abstain from using harsh words. So the moment you've done that, your Samma Vacha becomes greater in power. So now you're filling all of these wheels. You're filling. It's like a pizza. Right? The Noble Eightfold Path is like a pizza. So think about it this way. You have a pizza. You slice it up into 8, as you do, okay? And how you start eating this pizza is from the inside out. You start from the middle and you start eating it to the outside. Okay? But the first bite you take from this slice that's called Samadhi. Of course, then that's how you always eat a pizza, right? You take a slice, you pick it up, and you start eating from the narrow edge, not the wide edge, right? You eat from the narrow edge, not where the sausage is. You start with the cheese, that's on the inside, right? So this is how you eat it. The narrow edge goes into your mouth. Okay? So you take one bite from Sammaditti. Before you took a bite from Sammaditti, you are a Putakchan. Now you've taken a bite from Sammaditti, you are an Arya. Now you are able to put that slice down. That's okay. Once you've done that, someone comes and shouts at you. And previously you used to respond with Michcha Vacha. Now you are responding with Samma Vacha. What you're doing now is, you are not taking up the second slice, you are picking up Sammaditti, Samma Sankappa, Samma Vacha. You are picking up the third slice and eating a bit. And you are putting it down again. Then someone comes and says, shall we go down and meditate for a little bit? Yeah, sure, let's go and meditate. So now you sat down and you're practicing meditation. Samma Samadhi, for a little bit. Say 15 minutes. And you're thinking about what happened when that person came and shouted at you. How did I respond at that time? Right? You're thinking about your thoughts. What are you doing now? Samma Sati and Samma Samma Sati and Samma Samadhi. You're doing both these things. And also, when that person came and shouted at you, even that time you were focusing on your mind, Samma Sati. So you ate a slice from that, you ate a one bit from that slice as well. Now you're practicing meditation, you're eating a piece from that slice as well. So now if you take a step back and looked at that pizza, you have four slices from which you have eaten a little bit. Some of the other slices you haven't even touched yet. That's okay. And then the day continues. And then something else happens. Then you eat a small piece from another slice. And then you listen to some Dhamma. You take an MP3 player or something and listen to some Dhamma, right? You listen to this sun. Say you listen to 15 minutes. Now you have even more Sammaditti. Another bit you eat from that slice. You put it back down. You listen to another 15 minutes. You need another bit from that slice. You put it back down. And then someone comes and says, how about we let's go, you know, there's a friend, not a good friend, a bad friend. He says, I've seen that I've seen something that I think you like. Why don't you come and have a look with me? You say, okay, let's go have a look. And he's looking at this, let's say there's a nice electronic device that you like to have. And he's found that there's this device that's lying on a desk, doesn't belong to you. And he says, just take that. And you say, no, hang on, surely that belongs to someone, it's not mine. He says, no, don't worry, take it, it's okay. And you know that that's going to be stealing. Now you think, stealing this is not the right thing to do. Why? You have Sammaditti now. You ate a bit from that slice. Because you ate a bit from that slice, you have Sammaditti. From the first slice, right? Now you are looking at this situation, and you go back into, you think, what was the taste of that slice? Equally, you're looking at how much Sammaditti do I have right now? And Sammaditti is telling you, stealing is a bad thing. If you steal, you're going to cause discomfort, you're going to cause stress, and you're going to cause sorrow and sadness to the person you're going to take it from. What a poor guy. Why do you put that person in that position? You know, he's going to suffer as soon as he realizes his device has gone missing. Because the same would happen to you as well, right? So you realize, no, I shouldn't be doing that. And you tell him, no, I'm not going to do that. That's wrong. Now what were you doing there? You were looking at your mind. Samma Sati. Now you eat another bit from that slice. Then you abstain from stealing. Now you are eating a bit from Samma Kammanta. And you put it back down. See, like this, over the course of a day, over the course of a week, over the course of a month, you practice this part. You practice, you eat bits of this pizza. A bit from each slice all the while. And then ultimately, one day is going to come when you have eaten the entire pizza. Right? You will have eaten bits from each slice, and one day you have completely eaten all of this pizza. And then that day you can say, I have finished my pizza. What happens then? You get a new pizza. You get a new pizza. First of all, you had an 8-inch pizza. What's the smallest size pizza you can find? 6-inch? Okay, let's say it's a small size pizza. A personal pizza. Okay? So, you finish your personal pizza. Now they bring you a medium-sized pizza. So this medium-sized pizza is what? Now the path to practice to become a Sakurdayana. Because once you've eaten your personal pizza, you are a Sotapan. You see how that happens. And then you are now eating the second size pizza, the medium size pizza. You are a Sakurdayana. Once you finish eating that pizza, you bring a large pizza. Now you are another Dhamma. Once you finish that pizza, they bring you another pizza. It's an extra large pizza. Once you finish that, you are another Dhamma. Now tell me, how can you say eating pizza doesn't help you practice the path of Nibbana? This is how pizza can help you attain Nibbana. You see? What did I not tell you a few minutes ago? Dhamma teachers are everywhere. Everywhere you look, you can find Dhamma. You can find Anicca Dukkha Anatta. When you begin to see the world like this, you know, examples keep coming into your head out of nowhere. I've never heard this before. This is the first time I've listened to this. How can you look at a pizza and realize this is how we can help you attain nirvana? Okay?
So this is what practicing the path is. This is what following the way of the Dhamma is. By practicing the Noble Eightfold Path. This is the only thing you need to do. Practice the Noble Eightfold Path. You don't need to do anything else. Just going back to the questions again, how can we know that we are correctly following the way of Dhamma? I think we covered that. The way to know if you are correctly following the way of Dhamma is by introspecting, looking at your own mind, compare what you're doing right now to what you would have done in the past. Are your thoughts to do with anicca dukkha anatta? Are your thoughts to do with letting go of desire? Or, you know, these avihinsa sankalpana, nikkama sankalpana, avyapada sankalpana. You know, is that what your thoughts are like now? Are your actions abstaining from wrong actions? Is your livelihood abstaining from, you know, and checking constantly, using that radar to check, you know, what are my thoughts now? What are my actions now? What is my speech now? Is that what you're always doing? If you're doing these things, then you're practicing the path. Then you're on the right path. Now, there'll be times when you are practicing the path and someone might come and tell you, actually, no, practicing the path to Nibbana is you should sit down for meditation and then you're going to start to see colors of all, you know, lights of all colors. You're going to see yellow color and blue color and red color and green color. When you've seen all these four colors, you are Narahant. What should you do now? Put that, whatever you've heard, you put it into the Dhamma. You put it into the Sutra. You put it into the discipline. So Vinaya Sutra Dhamma and Vinaya Sutra and Dhamma, and check, does this make sense? So you put it into Paricchasamuppada. You put it into the Arya Ashtanga Marga. You put it into the Noble Eightfold Path. Where in the Noble Eightfold Path does it say to become an Arahant, you have to see lights of four different colors? If nowhere does it say that you seeing four different colored lights is the path to Nibbana, then that is not the Dhamma. That is not the Buddha's Dhamma. See, very simple. Why complicate things? Keep it simple. Okay? And what is actually meant by practicing anicca dukkha anatta? So, practicing anicca dukkha anatta is to look at the world as being anicca dukkha anatta. So, we've done a sermon. I think we've had several sermons we did on this subject of anicca dukkha anatta. So I would encourage the listener to go and listen to these sermons. They're on the YouTube playlist. But in brief, anicca is the fact that nothing in the world is to my liking. Your liking has nothing to do with what the outcome is. As long as there are conditions, you get the output, the result. Okay? And if that is the nature of the world, if you attach to something that is anicca, then you're going to get dukkha dukkha, viparinama dukkha and sankhara dukkha. You're always going to have to suffer because you're always going to have to worry. Is what I'm attached to going to be the way it is forever? Is it going to break? Is someone going to steal it from me? Is it going to be destroyed at some point? You're always going to have to keep thinking about it. And then, no matter how much you protect it, it's going to break. It's going to fall apart. It's going to be destroyed. And then when that happens, you're going to suffer from viparinama dukkha. And then to either delay or to stop dukkha dukkha and viparinama dukkha, you have to do abhisankara dukkha, which is actually having to do something to protect it, to put it back together when it falls apart. That is abhisankara dukkha. Okay? And then dedicating your life to doing that is anatta. It's essenceless, it's meaningless to do that thing. This is why you need to stop doing that. This is why the Buddha says, anicca kayatena dukkham bayatena anattam asara kattayinati. Okay? So isn't fate more or less similar to karma? You can take fate as being you can take fate as being karma, but generally I think the meaning of fate is taken as something that is bound to happen. But you know, this is what how normally someone would say, you know, if someone says, I lost my job, and someone might say, oh well, that's my fate. Because what they think is, well, that is what was bound to happen. That is, you know, that is the only way it could have happened, and no other way. That's not necessarily true. The reason that someone would have lost their job is because that were the conditions that were in play at that point in time. You might have done something for someone else to have lost their job in the past. That would have been a karma. But what if you also gave someone a job, or you helped someone else to find a job? So at that point, it doesn't, you know, you can't tell which karma is going to come and give result. Right? Sometimes it could be the karma that you did to make someone lose their job, or it could be the karma that you did to help someone get a job. You know, I use this example where, say you're driving on the road, okay, and as you're driving, someone else pulls up in front of you, in their car. Now you're angry. Now you're really angry. Why? Because you didn't want that. You didn't like that to happen. But 5 or 10 seconds later, another car comes from another side of the road. As you go into a four-way junction, another car comes racing and it hits the car in front of you. The reason you slowed down is because this guy pulled in front of you. Now, how can you tell whether that was a good karma or a bad karma? Well, the guy pulled in front of you, yeah, and you had to brake. Now, that could have been the result of a bad karma. But what about the fact that because he did that, he was the one who was subject to the accident and you were saved? Wasn't that a good karma? It could have been. So, this is why, we can't tell which one is good or bad. This is why we can't judge the world. We can't tell whether what's happening in the world is good or bad. Compared to Nibbana, everything is pointless. Compared to Nibbana, everything is meaningless. Because Nibbana is the only ultimate reality. It's the only ultimate happiness. But in the conventional world, we can't be a judge. We can't say this is good, that's bad. Because we don't know if something bad happens. You know, say you're walking along the road and you trip and you fall. And you might say, oh, that was my bad karma that happened to me. True, it could be your bad karma. But what if you walked another 2 steps and there was some construction going on? And then there was a huge load of concrete blocks that was dropped from some height. And, you know, 2 seconds after you fell, this concrete blocks fell in front of you and crashed. Wouldn't now you be thanking for the fact that you fell on the road? Because otherwise, that concrete blocks would have crashed on your head. 2 seconds and your life was saved. If you go on YouTube, you find lots of these examples. Saved, you know, by a split second. Right? So, this is how, you know, good karma, bad karma. So how can you say, this is my fate? Okay? This is the problem. In a previous sermon, the time ago there was a monk, yeah, we covered that, and even said, yeah, we covered that. So my question is, just by studying the lessons of the Dhamma, can we one day achieve the state of Sotapanna? Absolutely. If you practice, learn the Dhamma to understand it, and then practice it. And then that becomes understanding. So learn the Dhamma to acquire knowledge, but then practice it, and then that becomes understanding. Unless you understand the Dhamma, you cannot attain Sotapanna. Learning the Dhamma is not enough to attain Sotapanna. Acquiring knowledge is not enough to understand Sotapanna. You have to understand it. To understand it, you have to do Yoniso Manasikara, which is putting into practice what you have learned. Okay? Just going back onto Skype again, I think there was a few more questions that were posted. So there's a question about Chitta Viti, 17 thought moments, Avyakata, Patijasamupada cycle, Akusala, Kusala and Akusala Mula Pravurti cycle. How does one know that he has already moved past Sotapanna, now Sakudagami and now Anagami? What is the experiment to be done? I'm aware of all three, but explanation using examples. How does one realize that the gati is causing him to start akusala patisampada and bring it to a halt? Okay. Thank you for posting those questions and for bringing them back up, as I requested. I think the patisampada and the chitta viti questions, it's best if we cover at a separate sermon. And because I think today's sermon we focused a lot about, you know, how does one know when they become a sotapanna, how do we, you know, what is the path we need to practice, how do we know you're on the right path, and we covered a few of these topics. And I think particularly these questions about thought moments and avyaya kuta pratisampada, etc., etc., you know, these are quite deep concepts. These are good for someone who is looking to learn the Dhamma, to preach the Dhamma, to help other people to practice the Dhamma. But as I said, and I have repeated myself several times on this sermon, you don't need any of this to attain Sotapanna, you don't need any of this to attain Sakadagam, you don't need any of this to attain Anagam, you don't need any of this to attain Arahat. Remember when Asaji Maharatan once met Upatissa, he said, "I don't know much. The only thing I do know is Ye Dhamma Hetu Pava Tesam Hetu Tathagato Aha." That was enough for Upatissa to become an Arahant. Remember when the Buddha was going on alms and met Dharuchiri, and Dharuchiri said, "Please preach me the Dhamma so I can become an Arahant quickly." And he said, "Ditteva Dittamattam Suteva Sutamattam Vinyate Vinyatamattam Mute Mutamattam Vinyate Vinyatamattam," which is, what you see is nothing but a sight moment. What you hear is nothing but a speech or a sound moment. What you feel is nothing but a sense moment. What you think is nothing but a thought moment. He's not talking about the chitta viti there. He's not talking about paticchasamuppada. I mean, he is, but he's not going into any detail there. You know, that was enough for him to become an Arahant. This is what I'm saying. When we go and study Abhidhamma, it's easy to get lost in Abhidhamma. Because Abhidhamma is like the laboratory. The reason we use, I'm not saying we should discard the Abhidhamma or disregard the Abhidhamma. The Abhidhamma is important. It's very important. It's important for when we are not sure which one's right or wrong. It's like, say you have some chemical in a bottle and you don't know what type of chemical this is. You can go into the lab and do some experiments. And by doing these experiments, you can work out whether it's chemical 1, it's chemical type 2, it's chemical type 3, and so on and so forth. Abhidhamma is the laboratory. But when you have the chemicals labeled, this is sodium hydroxide, this is calcium carbonate, okay, and this is something else, etc., etc., you can accept that this is what it is because you know someone else has done all the experiments. Why worry about doing those experiments in the laboratory? Because we don't have the luxury of time to do all of these things. What we need to do is focus on what we have and make use of what we have and get the result that we need. Once you become an Arahant, go and study all the Abhidhamma you like. No problem. Why? Because you've done what you need to do. Now your life is not precious to you anymore. Because you don't need your life anymore. Once you become an Arahant. But until you become an Arahant, be careful about how you go to practice this Dhamma. You know, sometimes this is why I said, when you learn the Dhamma, when you listen to the Dhamma, you know, remember, sabba rasan, dhamma rasan jinati. There is nothing more pleasurable than the pleasure and the taste of Dhamma. So when you start learning the Dhamma, you want to know more. And you then begin to look into Abhidhamma books, you go and, you know, read the suttas, and you read all of these, and you want to explore the Dhamma. Which is, you know, it's like walking into a rainforest. When you walk into a rainforest for the first time, right, and you look around you and you see the green trees, and you hear birds chirping,
Okay, and you see the wildlife. You think, oh my God, I want to walk into this more and more. I want to you know, explore this further. I want to walk deeper into the forest. Sometimes without you knowing, you walk deeper and deeper into the forest, and then you get lost in the forest. Remember, you entered the forest when it was daylight. Now it's evening, and then it becomes night. Once it gets night, once it's nightfall, you can't find your way back out. Now you are lost in the forest, and there's no one to save you. So especially if you're practicing, or if you're trying to walk this forest, make sure you've got a good teacher with you. Otherwise you can get lost. And also, when you had the reason I use the forest example is because, say, you wanted to get from town A or town A to town B. There are two paths. One path is a straight road, but there's nothing to look, you know, it's just a normal road. And then someone says you can take a scenic route, another route which is you can go through the forest. If you go through the forest, you're going to see wildlife. You're going to see animals and you're going to see birds and you're going to see, you know, all types of greenery, etc. Okay? But that path is not very clear. You're going to have to find the path yourself a little bit, and you're going to have to clear the path because people usually take this straight path. So there'll be other kinds of forest, and there'll be undergrowth that has covered the path. So you're going to have to be careful where you go. Most people take the straight path, because that's easier. And, you know, because people walk all the time, it's the path that is most clear. But if you choose the other path, you have to go with someone who's been there before. Otherwise you can get lost. It's a very thick forest. Chittaviti, thought moments, you and I will never be able to see. These are things we can learn, these are things we can understand, but these are things we can learn and these are things we can acquire knowledge about, but never things we can understand. Why? Because only a Buddha can see thought moments. Thought moments are chittaviti. Okay? Thought cycles, chittaviti. Only a Buddha can see chittaviti. So, whatever we learn about chittaviti, we can only take by faith. It's never going to be conviction. But what about Panchupadana Skanda? That we can take by conviction. Because we experience that. If I tell you what you see with your eyes, what you hear with your ears, what you smell with your nose, what you taste with your tongue, and what you sense with your body is anicca dukkha anatta. You can relate to that. Why? Because you can think about it and it will make sense to you. But if I start talking to you about how your mind works and all those thought moments about how your mind changes, you know, once every billion seconds, a billion times every second, you know, you're not sensitive to that. So you can't respond to that. You can't see that. So you're going to have to just believe me because I'm saying it. So I could tell you anything I like and you're going to have to accept it. So this is why you have to be careful. Now, that's again not to say don't study the Abhidhamma. Of course, you know, there's value in doing that. Especially if you're interested in teaching someone else, and if you're interested, then no harm in that. But I think this is something we should probably do at another time and in a smaller audience, where we have just the people who are interested. Because if I start talking about chittaviti now, everyone's going to fall asleep. And people are just going to switch off their computers and they're going to walk away. Because 99% of people will not be able to understand it. 99% of people will not be interested in it. Why? Because they just want to take the short path. Why? Because they have no trust, you know, they don't believe that their life is going to be limitless. They have no idea when they're going to die. So they just want to get this done as soon as possible. So you're going to take the short path, right? So what I would suggest is, if anyone's interested in that, and I think we have a visitor who's going to be with us for a few days in April, and I think it's the same gentleman that's posted these questions. So I would welcome this gentleman to bring those questions for the time we meet, and we can then
we can then discuss this in more detail. And by all means, I think, you know, when that happens, we can record that and then make it available for others, in the case that they're interested in listening, if that is the case. But I think it's best if we do it like that, rather than doing it in an open kind of sermon like this. I hope that is an acceptable answer. I don't mean to upset or offend anyone by sharing my sentiments. The reason I say these things is because, you know, this is how I feel. I'm very careful about how I spend my life. These moments that I'm alive are very precious. Every minute, every hour, every day that passes are very valuable to me. I will always pick and choose how I spend my time. Because every second that passes away, I'm never going to be able to bring it back. Right? So, if those passing moments I spend on doing things that don't directly help me attain Nibbana, then that's valuable time that I'm wasting. And I don't want to be wasting my time. And I wouldn't encourage anyone to do that either. Okay. I think we'll bring the sermon to a close at that point. But before we do that, let us transfer the merits that we have all acquired to all those beings that are looking to rejoice in those merits and looking to accept those merits. So, for about 2.5 hours now, we've been preaching and discussing the Lord Buddha's Dhamma. May all the devas, the brahmas, the spirits, the demons and the dead who we invited at the start of this sermon rejoice in the meritorious deed that we have just done today. May all those who helped us make this meritorious event a success be able to rejoice in these merits. May they all be able to accept these merits, and if any of them are born in the woeful plane, may these merits help them be born in the blissful plane. May they practice the Noble Eightfold Path. May they abstain from all the wrongdoings. May they engage in all the wholesome deeds and practice a life of fulfillment in the noble sense, and be able to achieve the noble attainments of Sotapanna, Sakuddagami, Anagami and Arahat. May all beings, wherever they are in the world, be able to accept these merits. May they all rejoice in these merits. May you and I, as well as everyone that has listened to this sermon, all your friends, all your relations, be able to share the joy that we have all, that we are all looking for to gain by listening to these sermons and by practicing the Lord Buddha's teaching, by practicing his path. May we all be able to experience that and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. May all beings be happy. May all beings attain the noble bliss of Nibbana. Theruvan Sarnayan.